If you don't keep knocking on the door, it's never going to open. But at some point, when you keep knocking on the door and it doesn't open, is that a message that you need to pivot and go in another direction? I don't have the answer to that. I just think I'm going to knock as much as I can, but at some point, I need to leave it in the hands of the big guy.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn and discover how speaking with people of other faiths can strengthen our own faith and even our own practice. When I was 14, we moved to a new city, and my dad had a brand new job, but he hadn't worked for the 6 months you had to in those days to qualify for insurance to kick in. So, of course, he had a terrible accident. He slammed his head into a wall while playing racquetball, and he was unconscious. When my mother and I got to the hospital, he did recognize us, but he didn't remember we had moved or he had a new job, and my mom was very worried about how we were going to live both short-term and especially long-term, because we didn't know what his recovery would be like. So we got help from our church community that provided some food right away, and then as it went on over a few months, we received some government help in the form of food stamps for several months. So we were grateful for our church community for instantly stepping in and meeting the need, and then also grateful months later for temporary help the government could give us when our little church community had given what they could. So it seems there is a place for government help and for church communities to help, but what is the right balance and how can they work together, or should they? Our guest today is Governor John Kasich, who served as governor of Ohio from 2011 to 2019 and ran for president in the 2016 GOP primary. Today he runs the Kasich Company and is a political analyst for NBC, CNBC, and MSNBC. Married to Karen Kasich, and is the proud father of two daughters. In addition to his extensive work in government, he's also written a new book, Heaven Help Us, How Faith Communities Inspire Hope, Strengthen Neighborhoods, and Build the Future.
It just occurred to me, and there was a little bit of discussion and disagreement about the title with the publisher, because it's not like Heaven Help Us, like, oh, it's different. It's Heaven Help Us, you know, like an upbeat kind of thing, but it sticks in your mind for sure. They wanted to put something in there about the government, and I said, no way, because this has nothing to do with politics. They agreed, we move forward, and voila.
I like that angle. In fact, looking through the book made me think of the phrase, heaven helps those that help themselves.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting thing. Heaven does help those, Steve, that help themselves. And always the great mystery is, how much do I need to do, and how much is the Lord going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think any of us have the answer. It's sort of like, well, if you don't keep knocking on the door, it's never going to open. But at some point, when you keep knocking on the door and it doesn't open, is that a message that you need to pivot and go in another direction? I don't have the answer to that. I just think I'm going to knock as much as I can, but at some point, I need to leave it in the hands of the big guy.
Because you talk about faith institutions and you have come from working with governmental, what do you see as the difference in what they can accomplish?
Well, first of all, you know, the government has so many rules and regulations, so sometimes it can get in the way and cause frustration. But in the private sector with these institutions, you see a problem, you can go and fix it, and you can create it in a way that's consistent with the locals, the place mm-hmm. where you live, not getting orders from some other place. But secondly, I think partnerships are good. I think that you can have the faith community, as long as you're not proselytizing, you can take your faith journey into the public sector, into the schools, into the area of foster care, like we can see, or literacy, whatever. You can see that there are plenty of places where government and faith can come together. Again, you're not in there trying to convert anybody, they'll get converted just by seeing how nice you are. I think there's a role both for the government that the private sector can't do. I mean, at one point, there was a guy that wrote a book that said, you know, all these welfare programs are crowding out, you know, charities, but charities can't do it all. I mean, churches can't do it all. There has to be a role. And I think that whenever you're able to kind of mix that together and find the right dials here to get it to work, I think it can be a wonderful thing.
I'd like to jump in and talk about a few of the stories that
sure.
you highlight, because really you do feature stories. So it's not just we've got to do better. You really point us to people who could show us in different situations the way that this has been done successfully and might, I think, trigger in people's minds, well, what might work where I live?
Yeah.
And one that we were very privileged to interview on episode 110 of our show a while ago is Reverend Eric Manning from the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston. And boy, I can see why you decided that you wanted to feature that story. It's really forgiveness, isn't it?
It is. It's about forgiveness. And that's the story of 9 people being murdered at the AME church in Charleston. And people knew the story, but I wanted to put it in there because don't you think we all need to have and also give forgiveness, Steve? And the story is just so breathtaking, though, that people could have at an arraignment stood up and said, I forgive you, even though you murdered my family. I mean, how can you even comprehend it? But we also know that there's peaks and valleys in this. You know, you do it, then you wonder, did I do the right thing? And Eric Manning was a gift from the Lord to that church, and they're healing, and they want to remember. But I think we can all use a dose of forgiveness, because that's all part of what we're supposed to do. And a really, really powerful story.
When you were governor, it seems like you would have seen a lot of examples where people of faith or individual communities or congregations might band together. Did you see examples of people really making good things happen from their vantage point of their faith and their congregations?
Well, I can't tell you that we did some kind of a calculus, but I gave out a thing called a Courage Award, gave gold medals to people who had done remarkable things, some of them faith-oriented, some of them not faith-oriented, like Neil Armstrong. We gave his family a medal. But there was a lot more than that. There were these 3 women who had been held captive in the basement of this house. We gave them one. We gave one to a woman who had a son who had been killed. And this is a faith story, who built a community now where they are basically helping young people to avoid ever falling into the gang routine. And my first book was called Courage is Contagious, which is about people doing remarkable things that we never heard of. The reason I wanted to do this one is because if you do it alone, it's hard. If you do it in a group, it's easier. Nothing's easy here, but it's easier if you have an institution like a clubhouse. Well, if you want to bring about change in any of these areas of poverty or hunger or human trafficking or the challenges that we have with autism, any of those things, you know, like, what do I do? Where do I start? Well, if you can go to an institution and say, here's the problem, and the leaders of the institution, whether it's a church, a synagogue, or a mosque, if they hear your problem and they say, hey, we'd like to help you on that, well, then you have some psychological support, some material support, and you will have some people that will follow you. And that's why I wanted to talk about the power of community and faith and how it can accelerate anything that you want and allow you to reach your goals.
I really wanted to dig in not just a community, but communities partnering with other communities. And you feature the Tri-Faith Initiative, which is a really remarkable partnership, I guess, if you could call 3 things a partnership, where Christians, Jews, and Muslims all came together. And I'd love you to talk about why you picked. I don't want to say too much about what they do.
Well, I wanted to have a story about Muslims, and we had a couple in there. But I went to a U2 concert because I'd been friends with Bono and Bobby Shriver for many years, Bono's best pal. And I met Susie Buffett, who's the daughter of Warren Buffett. And I asked her if she knew of any people in the Muslim community who had done some interesting things. And she connected me with Bob Freeman, who was a member of the synagogue in Omaha, Nebraska, who had a dream, a vivid dream that he wrote down. And 15 years later, he realized the dream, working with the Muslim community and the Christian community, and they created a center. They bought a parcel of land, and on that parcel is a church, a synagogue, and a mosque, and a community center where they all hang out together. It's really a cool story. It's in Omaha, Nebraska.
We feature them in episode 181, and I'm just curious if I could ask you just personally for a moment, because this comes from somewhere. Can you tell me about your faith beginnings or the house you grew up in? Was faith a part of that house?
Yeah, I mean, we were churchgoers. And then as a young boy, I became an altar boy and then a commentator. And that was a big role in the church. I was very young. I went to public school. Because I'd gone to church so much over time, I had an argument on a playground and I got the nickname of Pope. And so to make a long story short, I graduated from high school, went to Ohio State, and I completely drifted away from faith. until 1987, when my parents were killed by a drunk driver. And at that point, I was as low as anybody could be. But I had some people who showed up, as they normally do when you go through a crisis, no matter who you are. And they said to me, "Where are you on your faith journey?" I couldn't answer it. And so they said, "Well, you have a window of opportunity to go through and try to figure out where you are vis-a-vis the Lord and your eternal destiny. And the window's going to close." So I decided to go through the window and check things out. But I have to say that through that crisis, not only did I find my faith, but I also found John Kasich. Mm. And I'd been very successful, was a very in a hurry man, and it was great to open myself up and find out and look at all the warts and everything else.
Well, I'm thinking of your playground friends calling you the Pope. You would not have been the first Pope John.
That's exactly right. And I'll tell you one funny story, if you don't mind. So when I was a commentator, the one thing I would do would be to introduce the closing hymn, maybe do a reading or something. And I don't know, I was probably a junior in high school, something like that. I can't remember exactly what. But I announced the closing hymn, and the priest comes down off the altar, and there's nobody singing. So I yelled to the organist, "Stop the music." And the priest is looking up at me, and I said, "Folks, do you understand that the Lord loves to hear singing, particularly singing here at the end of service? So pick up your books and turn to page 87 and sing the closing hymn, if you would." So the organ, I said, "Go ahead, keep playing that organ." So play the organ, you know, and there's a little bit more singing, but not much. And the service ends, and I'm getting ready to walk out, and a lady walks up to me, and she said, "Young man, I want you to know that I love to sing the closing hymn. It's one of my most favorite things before I leave. It leaves me in a very positive spirit. But the next time you announce the closing hymn, would you give us the right page?"
So that's why no one was singing along.
Exactly. You know, it's sort of like, damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead.
At least you're committed. I like that. I'm wondering if with a few years perspective, and by the way, I'm so sorry to hear about your parents. What a hard thing to lose them both at the
sure,
same time.
It was very tough.
With no warning.
Right.
I'm happy for the people that stepped in to support you.
Yes.
As you look back, do you see a guiding hand? Do you have a sense of mission about the ways you've been able to serve publicly or privately?
As I discovered many things about faith as I went along, because it wasn't anything like, "Well, just tell me something and I'll just buy it." It was a sincere, honest exploration. It's taken me to a place now where I'm healthy and happy. It's a hell of a way to go through something to get any better, you know, and it's affected my family deeply. But what I would tell you is that Helmut is a minister who spoke during World War II, and he would preach in churches that were being bombed. And this is what I really want to say to our listeners. Thielicke writes in a book that there are so many things that happen in our lives and so many difficult things, but that all things pass through the hands of the Lord. And that somehow he bends those things so that all things work to the best for those that do love God. Mm. And I've accepted that. It doesn't make things easy when we go through terrible situations, but it may give us a little perspective that at some point justice will be done, and at some point things will be made right. So do I see the hand of God? I mean, God didn't cause that drunk driver to kill my parents, and it was my choice to go through the window of opportunity, but I've grown from it. And I'm still a knucklehead. You know, I still am a hypocrite and everything else, but at least I kind of know that, and I can work at it.
And I've stated it now.
But I don't want to say that God allows those things to happen so we can get better. Those things happen because man is capable of doing very bad, stupid, and evil things to one another. And God doesn't treat us like we're puppets. He wants us to have free will. But at the end, could he have stopped that car from hitting my parents? Yeah, he could have. He didn't. Why? I don't know. I mean, maybe I'd ask him when I see him later, but I'm not sure I'll need an answer then. Somehow he knows what's happening, and he will make things ultimately, and it may not be ever in this lifetime, work out for good. I talked to a woman this morning. She's a great nurse. She so much wanted to be a supervisor in her field. She's not getting it. She was very frustrated and very upset and very angry. I talked to her this morning, and She had a whole different attitude. I said, well, you sound like you're doing good. And I was just calling her just to check on her. And she said, well, you know what? I've decided to let God run this. I've done everything I can do. There's nothing more than I can do. And maybe he knows something that I don't know. And I'm cool with right now where things are. That's a good approach. It's certainly a mentally balancing approach, and I don't believe in any way, shape, or form it's delusional. I think it's real.
Yeah, it's an expression of faith, actually,
right,
that you can trust.
Right.
Let me tell you about Kaboom, a thrilling audio adventure podcast made for the whole family to enjoy together. Whether it's a teleportation experiment gone wrong or an ancient Viking curse wreaking havoc on the high school football team, Kaboom has an adventure made just for you. With a new adventure every episode, you'll meet magical creatures, explore outer worlds, and maybe learn some valuable life lessons along the way. Subscribe to Kaboom on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is In Good Faith. We're speaking with John Kasich, former governor of Ohio. In your book, Heaven Help Us, you talk about faith communities and how they inspire hope and strengthen neighborhoods. And one of my favorite examples of this comes from episode 162 of our podcast, when we got to speak with members of the Naperville Interfaith Leaders Association. So after a synagogue shooting in another state, the local members of the mosque showed up at the synagogue to show support and offer protection. And as the Jewish congregation arrived for Shabbat prayers, they appreciated this, of course. But then once they were inside, they realized that in order to stand up for them, their Muslim neighbors had missed their own Friday prayers at the mosque. So they invite all their Muslim neighbors in to use the room in the synagogue for their prayers. I just thought it was a really powerful example of not only working together within our own communities of faith, but actually standing up for other faith traditions as well. Because we live in a time when people are divided in different ways and sometimes actually taught to sort of have enmity or contempt towards each other, what you're talking about in the book are examples of people who said, I'm just going to be curious and reach out to these people who are my neighbors and see what could happen. What gives you hope that people will do that?
Because it's happening all over the country. I mean, I featured 14, 15 stories. I could have had 1,000 of them had I looked hard enough. I think that we are strongest when we think about the power we have from the bottom up. As I like to say, if the Secretary of State and your trash man went on vacation, who would you miss more? And so the power in the country rests at the local level, not at the higher level. And people can have an ability to do amazing things. My wife has this thing she does. She visits her olds, and these are older people don't have anybody. She goes there every so often, and they love to see her, and she loves to be with them. And it's little things that we can do. I mean, one of the great problems we have in America today is the issue of loneliness. And all of us can figure out a way to respond to people that we see who are lonely.
I had a chance to speak once for a few minutes with Senator Orrin Hatch.
And yeah.
Actually, the subject was mostly on music.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was his big thing. Yeah.
But I did say, what are you most grateful for? What's the big positive in the country? And he thought for a minute and he said, we are so used to being free that we don't even know that we are. That's a blessing that we've just assumed. And you talk a lot in your book about agency, which to me is the power we have to use our freedom, to use our money, our time, whatever. We sometimes hear that young people are leaving the church, but even when that has been true, it seems like they haven't been leaving faith or a desire to do good or make things happen in the community. Is that hopeful to you?
I don't think we calculate how faithful people are by how many times they go to church or how many times they cross themselves. You know, faith is a relationship. Sometimes when I see little kids, maybe 8 or 9 years old, I might ask them, you know, do you guys pray? In fact, I just ran into a beautiful family on a walk with one of my buddies, and the dad was there, and there were two little girls, brother who was younger, and a little boy that he was carrying. Just adorable, darling kids. I said, do you pray at night? Yes, we do. And I said, well, do you know who Jesus is? You know, he's your buddy. That when everything else goes away, he's with you. And that's the way you need to think about it. Like, he's your friend, and he loves you. And if you get to know him, you're going to be really excited. So when you pray, it's not just a bunch of words. It's like speaking to somebody, like speaking to your mommy or your daddy or your friends. It's really important that you think of it that way.
You talk a lot about institutions in this book. So you featured in your first one, Courage is Contagious, Individuals, but you do feature institutions and organizations. And I'm wondering if there are any particular stories that we might not have talked about that speak to the power of institutions on their own or working together with each other to make good things happen in communities.
Well, look, I can tell you that when I first started trying to run for public office, I was, I think, 25 years old. I had no relatives that lived in Ohio. When I told people what I was going to do, they thought I was crazy, that there was no way I could win. But what I found is, as I built a team, it energized me to do more. And the more I did, the bigger the team grew, and the team provided the high octane, and I won an election that I should never have been able to win. And so that's always inspired me to know. And when I fought to balance the federal budget, the first vote on the budget was 405 no and 30 yes. And most of them voted for me because they didn't want me to be completely embarrassed. But I knew that when I was going to walk a lonely road, and a lonely road is not a crazy road because you got to make sure you're not on, you know, walking like someplace you shouldn't be walking. But what I came to realize is people will respond to somebody who has a great motivational or a great idea and they need help, that people will come to the fore. So that is what the institution provides. It's the clubhouse for social change. I was talking to a woman just the other day. She has an autistic son. I've connected her with a person who I was doing an interview with CBN. I've connected her with somebody. The two of them now are going to talk about what they can do to build a group home for the autistic. And if she were to try to do it alone, I don't think she'd know where to go. But doing it with somebody else, you know, is a possibility.
You have kind of an epilogue, and I'm wondering what you're hoping to express there and what you hope people will walk away or as they close the pages of the book, have stuck in their minds and are thinking about.
What I really want them to realize is that they can do something. It doesn't have to be hitting a home run with men on base, a grand slam. A single will do. And if you're frustrated about what's happening in the country or you're frustrated, just get involved in an activity. Hang out with other people. And all of a sudden, you're going to feel really great. You know, I don't know if you know, this will really blow your mind, Steve. I don't know if you know who Metallica is, but they're a, you know, they're a rock band.
I have guitar playing sons who remind me all the time.
Well, I took five of my young friends. See, I'm a believer that when you get older, you need to have young friends. And we're going down to the Metallica concert. And it was just so much fun to be together, to have that strength of friendship and relationship. And so I want people to realize that, you know, hanging out with others is gonna matter. You don't have to go to a Metallica concert, okay? You can go listen to Lawrence Welk for all you want, it's fine with me. But I think community, togetherness, friendship, to me it's like, it's faith, family, and friends. And friends are an interesting thing because with friends it's loyalty, both ways. Both ways. And I've had friends that have helped me and worked with me for some for as long as 50 years. What a gift.
Yeah, that's
a treasure.
Many thanks to Governor John Kasich for speaking with us. Be sure you subscribe to the In Good Faith newsletter. Go to ingoodfaithpodcast.org to sign up for behind-the-scenes access. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Aaliyah Alexander, Heidi Hansen, and James Sturtevant. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Ashton Parkinson, and DJ Cromarty. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at In Good Faith Podcast. Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel for extended interviews. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. Join me again soon, right here, In Good Faith.